Hey, what's going on? PA and Florio are podcasting. I'm Paul Allen. He's Mike Florio. And to satisfy the bosses, let's get the cross promotion out of the way. I'm the play-by-play guy for the Minnesota Vikings. I also do a radio show at FM 100.3 KFAN in the cornfields of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Accessible at KFAN.com, and we are part of the iHeartRadio family. Mike, how are you, and where can people find you?
First of all, why did you get to go first? And secondly, why did you read that like you're doing a commercial for some cheesy local access TV channel?
Well, because the producers, Eric Nordquist and Sean Gosser, told me that we were going alphabetically with who talks first and why. And I'm Alan and you're Florio. So I'll ask you again. If people want to listen to your radio show, where can they find it?
NBCSportsRadio.com, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. On affiliates coast to coast, also simulcast on NBCSN from 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The radio show re-airs from 9 to 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And also,
that's the best radio voice I can do.
And also,
PFT.
ProFootballTalk.com, the preferred National Football League website of the universe. Right, Michael?
Hey, if that's your line, I'll live with it. I don't know what they check out on Uranus, but maybe they have an internet hookup there.
Well, my backside really has nothing to do with this podcast, but I would like to begin with this question. What is your vision for the PA and Florio podcast?
My vision for this is the same as it is for anything else I do. I have no vision. I just do things. I do things that I have fun doing, which doesn't explain why I'm doing this. But generally, my vision and mission statement is have fun, avoid work, and watch football games.
I think the most consternation and or angst we have had in preparing the hopefully incredibly popular but very, very controversial PA and Florio podcast was coming up with a name for it. The number one suggestion I saw via Twitter, and by the way, Podcast Nation, on the not yet created but ever expanding And He's Loose podcast family network, my Twitter is at PA on the mic.
His what in is the at, world are you doing? What his land is, the plane.
His is out at Pro Football Talk. The one that I liked was Boom and Gloom. Why don't you like that?
I don't like Boom and Gloom. I don't like being painted as the gloom to your boom. And
but
just
why?
Because you say boom at the start of every Vikings game,
correct,
that doesn't give you license to call yourself Boom. You're a grown man. You're not Boom. Do you also wear Vikings jerseys to the mall?
No, but I wear them during games when I call games like this weekend in Philadelphia, Michael.
Do you wear shoulder pads too? Are you like Mike Tice that day at practice that he showed up in full gear?
Right. I'm the only announcer in the National Football League that wears eye black during the game so I can be completely ready to become immersed within the action.
Well, seriously don't. You don't wear a jersey during the game, do you?
Of course not. Okay. I don't, since I'm not part of the glitzy NBC TV or radio family, I don't wear the $4,000 Joseph Abboud suit you wear or Hickey Freeman when I see you on Football Night in America, NBC. But we still put it together decently, even though I'm a radio guy.
Well, I keep trying to get somebody who's sitting down below you in that swanky new radio booth to throw a bucket of nachos up in your direction. So maybe you should wear a rain slicker like Ted in Ted 2 when they went to visit Tom Brady.
Michael, let's lead with some matchups that matter before you get all edgy and opinionated with the second to none topics I've put down via the set list. And even though Chicago Bears, Green Bay Packers, Thursday Night Football may not be the glitziest matchup in the history of the 2016 NFL season, it's important for many levels. It's a Northern Division collision. You have Green Bay coming off a home loss to Dallas. And everybody locally within the cornfields of Wisconsin and or nationally, they're kind of all over Aaron Rodgers right now. How do you see this matchup and what intrigues you?
Well, I don't want to spoil things and make it seem dated for the people who don't find this until Friday. See, now we got a problem. We've delved into a topic that is going to be moot for people who catch this on Friday. You're assuming the whole audience is going to see it on and listen to it on Thursday. We don't want to render our first episode irrelevant and have a shelf life like a newspaper, do we?
So you're the quarterback when the offensive coordinator puts in a play. You call a timeout because it's not the play you want, right?
Yes, and then I blame everybody but myself.
I completely understand what you're saying. Reset 3-2. Mike, Aaron Rodgers into the game against the Chicago Bears had a yards per attempt that was the lowest of his career. Can you explain why?
Well, look, I think it's funny that the general approach in football is the quarterback gets too much credit when things are going well and too much blame when things are going poorly. And things are not going well for the Packers, but Rodgers gets no blame. Until, like, all of a sudden, and now everybody's blaming him. Now he's getting too much blame. At some point, though, we have to say there is something different about Aaron Rodgers. You can see specific plays from the Cowboys game where he has a guy open. Unless the guy ran the wrong route and wasn't in the spot where he needed to be, Rodgers missed him.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hear Mike McCarthy talk about the running game, and there's all sorts of different explanations and excuses proffered. Last year it was he didn't have Jordy Nelson. Well, he's got Jordy Nelson this year. Is the excuse going to be, well, it takes a full year to recover from a torn ACL beyond
right.
the year that you get back onto the field? I don't know what it is, but something's not right with Aaron Rodgers. And isn't it funny that Mike McCarthy has no qualms about calling out everybody but Aaron Rodgers? I mean, he fat-shamed Eddie Lacy after the last season. They won't say anything about Aaron Rodgers because they know they're dealing with a guy who's a little bit of a diva. I mean, let's face it. He is very sensitive. He doesn't
right.
like being criticized. And I think that's complicating this as well, because behind closed doors, coaching staff is probably trying to figure out what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers. Publicly, they can't say anything is wrong with Aaron Rodgers, or they're going to lose him mentally. And once you lose your quarterback, you're done.
You know, his yards per attempt into that Bears game, 6.5. You mentioned Jordy Nelson is back. With the assumption that the field would be stretchable with Nelson back, Randall Cobb goes back to his basic full-time slot spot. They bring in Jared Cook, who's a field-stretching tight end, but then he got hurt. The assumption was it would be easier to stretch the field. My wonder is, I wonder if he's getting hit too much. For instance, In the NBC Football Night in America game, he got sacked 5 times by the Vikings. They sacked him 5 times in the final game of the 2015 at Lambeau, and he's getting hit more frequently than he's used to. And you know, I'm not going to make it sound like David Carr syndrome or anything, but I wonder if he's getting hit a little too much.
Well, you know, we've seen that with guys like Tom Brady, where the best way to beat him is to hit him early and hit him aggressively, so he's looking at and is more sensitive to the rush than whether and to what extent guys are open down the field. And that's just human nature. You start banging a guy around, and he is going to pay attention to the places where further hits may come from. So I'm not ready to dismiss that out of hand. That could be the case. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers is on the wrong side of 30 now, and we assume every quarterback is going to, number one, want to play until he's 40 or older, and number two, physically will be able to do so, and that's just not the case. And maybe he's just getting to that point. And don't we all have days like this where we ask ourselves, because we're really busy and it's stressful, and we don't have to worry about getting banged around physically. You have days where you say, why the hell am I doing this? You know, kind of like right now, I ask myself,
yeah.
why am I subjecting myself to this?
You're banging me around mentally.
What if you're Aaron Rodgers and you're just going through that? Like, maybe I have enough money that I don't need to do this anymore. Maybe I have other things I want to do. Maybe the full meaning and purpose of my life and my self-identification doesn't come from being the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. I don't know that that's true, but you just have to, you know, his demeanor, he doesn't seem like he's as all in as he seems exasperated at times. And maybe it's just frustration because things aren't going well, but something's not right and it hasn't gotten any better. I think it will. And I think they're going to be a very dangerous team if they find their way to the postseason, because back in 2010, when they were the number 6 seed, they ran the table. They went on the road. It's been since then that they've underachieved. They grossly overachieved in 2010. They've underachieved since then. They get back into the playoffs as the 6 seed with no expectations and an assumption that they're going to lose quickly. Watch out, because it could be divisional round. Packers roll into U.S. Bank Stadium, and that's the last team that the Vikings want showing up for a divisional round game or the conference championship.
Last one on the green and gold. With Aaron Rodgers is one of the most popular players in the NFL, so we talk extensively about him. You know, I think the omission of cornerback Sam Shields, now on the injured reserve, that's every bit as much a problem for Green Bay as Rodgers' 6.5 yards per attempt. I mean, Sam Shields played wide receiver at the University of Miami, so he was a guy without a spot. Subsequently, he went undrafted into the NFL. It was a great find by the Packers, but he is the nucleus to their secondary, even with Morgan Burnett and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. Casey Hayward left via free agency. By not having Sam Shields, it's easier to pass on Green Bay than it used to, and I think Rodgers may feel the need to pass more and go a little out of body more so than he used to, because quite honestly, he might not trust his defense.
Hey, and that's one thing that we always overlook. We get so caught up in analyzing offenses and defenses. They are a symbiotic relationship, and if your offense is bad, your defense is going to struggle. And if your defense is struggling, your offense is going to have issues. Look in Carolina. Why is the defense bad? A variety of reasons, one of which is the offense isn't as good as it used to be. And when you're not playing from 14 points ahead, all of a sudden it's a lot harder because you can't guess pass every play. And I think you may be onto something where if there is extra pressure on the Green Bay defense, there's an extra sense of urgency on Aaron Rodgers' part to try to make something happen, because he just assumes the defense eventually is going to yield enough points that without some scoring quickly, they're going to have a hard time winning the game.
This is the inaugural PA and Florio podcast. I'm Paul Allen, voice of the Minnesota Vikings, also of KFAN Radio. Mike Florio, NBC Sports Network, NBC Sports Radio, and ProFootballTalk.com.
Hey, Paul, this isn't like a radio show where you have to do that. They know who we are. A podcast means they tuned in and they're still listening. They're probably not now, but this isn't, you know, you've got years of radio where it's 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. They know who we are.
PFT.
Reset. 3,
maybe,
2.
Maybe we should call this boom and gloom. Yeah, you're typecasting me. You've been using this damn boom and gloom label so much that it's crept into my subconscious. So now I feel like I have to be a jerk. I have a reason now.
Now, I've done radio markedly longer than you. So podcast is a form of radio, and here's where I need to defend myself. The reintroduction, as the producers Sean Gosser and Eric Nordquist will tell you, is designed for those who don't freaking know who you are or who I am, so they know which is which. I'm Paul Allen. I'm Boom. You're Mike Florio. You're Gloom. And this is the And He's Loose Podcast Network.
I think they know who I am because they know I'm the one with the far less annoying voice.
And the full head of hair, and you're 5'10". You mentioned Carolina and the Carolina Panthers on
5'11".
A bye. On a bye at 1-7. Personally, you know, I know the Panthers have been in tough spots before and have rallied like 2014. I think they're in a really difficult spot to make the postseason this season. I don't think you'll go that far, will you?
I'm not ready to write them off, because if they can forget about 2015 once and for all and just get back to one game at a time, and they have a hell of an opportunity coming out of the bye. They got the Cardinals coming to town, right? So this is the ultimate game where everything was going their way in 2015. They blew out the Cardinals in the conference championship game. So if they can come out and play like they did last year and get some confidence and get a win, then maybe they can forget about 2015 and start digging. From 1-5 to 2-5, you get another one, you're 3-5. Then you're within striking distance of 500. Then you get to 500, you get on the wrong side, or the right side, rather, of 500. They've been on the wrong side all year. And then who knows? Now you're going to need help potentially. They're not going to run the table, but 10-6, 9-7, maybe they can sneak in. And they would be a dangerous team in the postseason because of the presence of Cam Newton and the nucleus of a team that carried them very far last year. And if I'm Ron Rivera, I'm saying to the Panthers, guys, you can still have a better season than you did last year. What you do from September to December only matters to the extent that it gets you a ticket to the party. Once the party starts, how you got there doesn't matter. That is a double up the oven mitts hot take. They can still get to the playoffs and they can still win the Super Bowl.
It makes me think,
wow, what a great NFL mind.
Do you think Team Panthers regret not giving in to Josh Norman?
At some level, maybe. The question becomes, though, how much are you going to pay for a 28-year-old cornerback? And maybe what they should have done is come up with some sort of a short-term deal where they keep him around for a few years while they work on grooming some replacements, but, you know, they ultimately decided, and this is a long-term process for them. How much longer is Josh Norman going to be playing at a high level? He's close to 30. But we don't think that because guys who finish the first 4 years of their NFL careers are typically 24, 25, yeah. maybe 26. He's pushing 29. And also, you let him walk away as a free agent now, and they dropped the franchise tag before May 11. So his departure counts toward their compensatory draft pick formula. So it's about having more opportunities at low cost, like he was for 4 years. He was very cheap for them for 4 years. He had a slotted fifth-round rookie contract. Right. You get your compensatory pick, and you keep trying to add pieces around your true nucleus. He was never part of the true nucleus. He was a guy who became a star last year because he played a position that is conducive to the development of stars. But their nucleus is Cam Newton on one side of the ball and Luke Kuechly on the other.
Mike, the Dallas Cowboys are the other team off this week, the Week 7 NFL. The Prescott-Romo decision is looming. What do you think happens there?
I think they are moving toward realizing that their best play is to apply the time-honored 100% rule to Tony Romo. He'll play when he's 100%, and they're going to say yeah. that at some point. I think Jerry Jones talks enough. He does two radio spots a week with our friends down at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. He talks before games, after games, whenever they stick a microphone in his face. He's very accommodating in that regard. And one of these occasions, he's going to be talking about Tony Romo and Dak Prescott, and he is going to say that Tony Romo will play when he's 100%. And that means he'll be 100% when they decide that it's time for Dak Prescott to take a seat because he's lost the magic. And that's going to be the challenge, picking the right moment to switch back to Southpaw, as Rocky Balboa once did. When do you make that switch? Do you stick with Dak Prescott through some tough spots, or do you go back to Tony Romo? Does it happen during a game? Does it happen after a game? If they're having a hard time in a playoff game, maybe an NFC Championship game against the Atlanta Falcons in the second half, and Randall Cunningham is still the quarterback while Brad Johnson is fully healed because they used the 100% rule on him in 98. Do you go back to Brad Johnson, or do you stick with Randall Cunningham? That may be a question at some point the Cowboys have to resolve. Do we stick with Dak Prescott? Do we go with Tony Romo? But I think they're setting
Who
it up.
Saw this coming. Fourth to round stick. Rookie Dak Prescott ranks second
what is
in
this?
Total QBR and has thrown seven
what am I hearing?
Dak Prescott tried to sabotage the podcast. Anyway, you were saying?
I can't remember what I was saying.
You were talking about Tony being 100%, Jerry working with your friends in Dallas, and he eventually was going to say something.
Yeah, eventually he's going to play again if Dak Prescott stumbles. But they're trying to find a way to keep Romo on the bench without benching him. And also to keep the flexibility to put Prescott on the bench without benching him. And applying the 100% rule to Tony Romo is the best way to do it. Were you deliberately trying to get me to shut up? What was that?
No,
is this a technical difficulty? Can we call it a technical difficulty?
No, if I were trying to get you to shut up, I'd hit this.
How about a beer?
Then you could sit back in the barn and watch your favorite sporting event. What happened?
I drink whiskey down there.
This is the first
Crown
podcast.
Royal. We need a Crown Royal sponsorship. My goal is to have one type of every bottle of Crown Royal. The problem is by the time I can get the ones I still don't have, I empty the ones that I have.
All right. Well, this is the first podcast, so technically speaking, given I'm not an elite technical mind, I'm trying to work the computer on my side so I can try to roll with your elite Dak Prescott takes.
Hey, you can just admit your speakers weren't turned off.
I wanted to see what his passer rating was against Cincinnati. Because into the Packers game, if people wanted to talk Dak or Romo and pin me down on it, I would lean the way of Romo because I think the playbook would be more voluminous. And with that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott and Dez Bryant back and healthy, I think you can do more with Tony. And as we chatted about earlier in the podcast, it's not like Green Bay's defense is formidable, but to go into Lambeau Field and handle that moment the way Dak Prescott handled it. I mean, obviously he shouldn't have been a fourth-round pick. Obviously he should have gone in the first round, should have gone ahead of Jared Goff if you want to redraft.
Whoa.
That was really eye-opening to me what he did at Lambeau.
Hey, I agree. Let me take issue with what you're saying, though, because if you had put Jared Goff on the Cowboys and Dak Prescott on the Rams, Prescott would still be on the bench, and Goff would be thriving with the Cowboys because
Right.
The Cowboys have the infrastructure to get a young quarterback ready to go quickly. Now, Dak has something to do with that. The quarterback has something to do with it. But I think one thing we're going to see moving forward, we're going to see more teams gravitate toward offensive coaches, and they're going to be looking to have a great offensive coordinator, a coach with an offensive background, a great quarterback's coach, maybe a veteran who's there who can help teach the young player instead of having designs on playing.
Yeah.
And you put all that together, the it takes a village approach is what's going to be necessary to develop young quarterbacks quickly. And you look at the Rams, I don't think it's a coincidence that Goff isn't playing and their head coach isn't an offensive guy.
You put me in a little bit of a box.
Box.
But when we saw Jared Goff with the Vikings at U.S. Bank Stadium, fourth preseason game, I get it. The Vikings were playing their twos and threes. The Rams started Goff, used him the entire first half. They played Kenny Britt. They played some starting offensive linemen who are playing now. And one game does not a career make. I understand it. But I left the game anything but overwhelmed with anything that Jared Goff did. So then now they come in the season, you know, and he can't beat Case Keenum. Where if you look at Philadelphia, even though Peterson recently has said he was shocked Bradford was traded, he was going to be his guy into the season, I think Peterson and Reich and the regime knew a little more or felt a little more strongly about Carson Wentz starting game one than they're leading on. So well, I understand
and
what you're
what?
Saying about it, L.A. and Dallas, but Dak, there's no way Dak should have gone in the fourth round. He's much more polished.
Well, and aren't the Cowboys happy that they were leapfrogged by the Broncos as Dallas was trying to trade back into round one? The Broncos jumped up with Seattle to get Paxton Lynch because that's who Jerry Jones really wanted, and he was upset when he didn't get him. But also, I think the other side of this coin is, and this becomes a chicken and the egg proposition, when you have a better quarterback coaching infrastructure, maybe you also have a better quarterback scouting infrastructure. So maybe it's a combination of the Rams not being able to coach up Goff and also possibly being wrong about Goff. We keep waiting for this reverse Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf, because the Chargers, they can't feel all that badly about Ryan Leaf because they didn't pick him. They knew they were going to get whoever was left after Peyton Manning. They got Ryan Leaf, and it would have been worse for the Colts if they had picked Ryan Leaf and allowed Peyton Manning to stay on the board. Washington in 2012, they didn't pick RG3. That's the guy who was left. And this year, and also maybe last year, based on where Jameis Winston currently is, who was the number one pick in 2015, Marcus Mariota was number two, it could be that we have two straight years of the team with the first overall pick and a quarterback going 1-2, the team with the first pick picking the wrong guy. It's possible that both years. Jury's out on Winston. I thought he was going to be an MVP candidate this year. Between Goff and Wentz, Wentz is clearly better, although Wentz has cooled off considerably over the past couple of weeks. They had the bye week at the worst possible time. They had momentum. They were rolling. And that week off, and I don't know how much that contributed to it, but they look like a completely different team now.
I wouldn't say he's cooled off. I mean, in the Redskins game, they gave up 230 on the ground. They had to come from behind, and he's only thrown one pick this year. I mean, Carson's arm is fantastic. He's completely in control of the huddle. And the problems that are emerging with Philadelphia are rush defense related. They're giving up 4.8 yards per run, 29th in the NFL. And Wentz may have come back a little bit because he's not playing the Bears or the Browns, but he still absolutely redraft the whole thing. He should have been the number one overall pick in the draft.
Are these just like the Vikings talking points as they get ready to play the Eagles so nobody thinks they're taking Carson Wentz lightly?
You don't think Wentz should have been first in the draft?
Well, based on what we know now, you just said it should be Dak Prescott.
No, not first. I said he should have been taken ahead of Jared Goff.
Okay, so you would have gone Wentz, then Prescott. Would that have been your number one, number two?
You know, Ezekiel Elliott went in the right spot. If you look at all the players taken in the first round, honestly, because Sheldon Rankins hasn't been able to play. Ronnie Stanley's gotten hurt of late. Laramie Tunsil had to change positions. It's not the glitziest first round the NFL has ever seen, at least at this stage, except for Ezekiel Elliott and Carson Wentz. Don't you agree?
Well, every first round ends up being a crapshoot, and it's very rare that they have hits all the way top to bottom, and that's part of the imperfection of the draft. If we all knew what was going to happen, they'd all look like 1989, where you had Hall of Famers, but for Tony Mandarich coming off the board right out of the gates. We don't know what a guy's going to become. There's a ceiling between being successful enough to be drafted in the Hall of Fame, and it's impossible to know where each guy's ceiling is.
What is your outlook for the Vikings off the bye, 5-0 at Philly this weekend?
Well, I feel like the correction's coming. I've seen this movie enough times to know that once you get caught up in a team and believe that it's going to continue unchanged, there's only been one team that's ever run the table wire to wire. And you look at these upcoming games, three of the next four on the road, at Philly, at Chicago, and at Washington. There's a loss lurking there. I know you like to do that thing. It's kind of overplayed, frankly. It's
what
like
do you mean?
Odell. It's like Odell Beckham in the kicking net, like all these people tweeting, I'm in Timbuktu and I haven't found the Vikings' first loss. Yeah, here, I'll tell you, it's down to three cities. Philadelphia,
okay.
Chicago, and Washington, whatever town FedEx Field is in.
Landover, Maryland.
It's in one of those three.
All right.
You will find it. You will be there to see it. You will find it. It'll be like a Pokemon. You will spot it, and you will know, and then they can all stop. Unless the next thing is, I can't find the Vikings' second loss. I hope to hell
no,
that doesn't become the next thing.
During the bye week, Michael, I flew to Philadelphia to look near the Liberty Bell, Chicago to look near Sears Tower, and Washington, D.C., where I searched the Smithsonian Institute. I can't find the Vikings' first loss during those games, Michael.
All right. So you're saying you're going to be 9-0. You're calling the shot 9-0 going into Arizona on November 20. And not going into Arizona, obviously, going into the Arizona game when they come to Minnesota.
I think the Vikings should win this weekend. Now, my major concern from a Vikings perspective in this game is when you get run on for 230 yards, like the Eagles did, it's like getting punched in the face. I have an immense amount of respect for defensive tackle Fletcher Cox. I think he's one of the best overall defensive players in the NFL. Fletcher didn't have a very good game. He always has good games. He did not have a good game in this game. So I think this Eagles defense is going to be really stingy at Lincoln Financial. The Vikings in two road games have started out trailing 10-0. But the thing that gives me confidence is Zimmer's defense versus a rookie quarterback, I think potentially is a major advantage. And Bradford has gone 152 consecutive without throwing a pick. So, you know, it's not like he's Joe Montana reincarnate, but he's doing it right for the Vikings. And I think over the body of the game, he'll be able to make enough plays to find a way to win against Philadelphia. And then we do Belichick and we go on to Chicago.
How's Zimmer after the bye? Last year they beat the Chiefs after the week off. What'd they do in 2014?
Can't remember. Team was 7-9. I'd say it's 50-50 either way. But, you know, one of the big keys here is when you lose Matt Khalil, Andre Smith, Teddy Bridgewater, Adrian Peterson, one of your starting defensive tackles, Sharif Floyd, a Philadelphia native, he hasn't been able to play yet. There's been a galvanizing effect with the defense and with the passing game where they feel like they need to do more than they probably really need to do. And you can't short sell the importance of cohesiveness in the ultimate team game. And the fact that Zimmer has 11 defensive guys on whom he counts back from last year, that's a major, major advantage, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I definitely think it's an advantage. But, you know, again, long season. Don't get too caught up in it. Don't start making your reservations for Houston. Long way to go. And you won't go to Houston unless they make it to the Super Bowl. You will never take your show on the road. You go to the Combine every year. You will never go to the Super Bowl. But because that's the place to be. You get access to all sorts of great guests.
I'd rather go to, if my team's not in the Super Bowl, I'd rather go to Mall of America and buy underwear from Lululemon.
Wearing your jersey? Who's your go-to Vikings jersey? If you did wear a Vikings jersey to Mall of America, who would it be?
Chad Greenway or Antoine Winfield?
Why Antoine Winfield?
One of the great corners in the history of the game, the history of the Vikings, that is. Incredibly learned, very cool guy. Yeah, I like Antoine a lot. Greenway, in my 15 years of calling Vikings football, Greenway, in a sea of knuckleheads that the NFL can be at times, guys like Greenway stick out, longevity, good off the field, good family guy, big Chad Greenway guy.
How far down the list is Favre?
He would be very far down the list because he wasn't here long enough. Now, 09, I mean, as I go, 2002 to 2016, the 09 was unbelievable until the end. But It's not like I'm saying the Vikings are going to go 16-0. I just don't know. I mean, forget the hashtag Vikings first loss Twitter bit. They definitely can beat the Eagles. They definitely can win at Chicago. You know, then you come home, you play the Lions. They should win that game. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I think they're going to win more games. I thought they'd win 12 games into the season, and I'm already wrong because I thought they'd lose at Charlotte. I had them 4-1 at this stage. So they're already a game ahead of the equation.
I will say this. Game by game, week by week, there isn't a game that you look at and say they should lose. Now, does that mean they will win them all? Hell no. But they should win every game, each game individually. Not they should win every game, but you pull out each game individually and they should win it. But injuries are the wild card, and we've already seen a rash of injuries. How many more can they take? At some point,
right,
it needs to even out.
Ain't no doubt. No, ain't no doubt. And I think they have like $100,000 in salary cap money left after the Jake Long signing, so you're completely right. Bill Belichick is not using Microsoft tablets anymore. Microsoft paid hundreds of millions of dollars to get on the sidelines. What's your opinion of this, and has there been any subsequent backlash from anybody?
Well, both Microsoft and the NFL issued statements supporting the product. And the NFL's position is there's nothing wrong with the tablet. It's a communications issue from the league's perspective. There's not an inherent defect in the tablet. And the tablet's not a bad product. I've got a Microsoft Surface laptop that I use when I'm on the road now. I've been a very loyal Apple guy. But, you know, it's not a bad product. It's lightweight. It's got a long battery life. But, you know, what the issue is getting the pictures down to the tablet and making sure the tablet works quickly when Bill Belichick needs it to work quickly. And he's just decided, you know what, if it's pictures, I'll just deal with the hard copies because I don't have to worry about the technology seizing up on me at the worst possible time. So the NFL is going to say it's the NFL's fault, even if it's not the NFL's fault, because the NFL is getting $400 million. And this isn't the kind of product placement Microsoft is looking for. Although this whole controversy could be spun into a positive because we're talking about Microsoft Surface. The only problem is we're talking about it because one of the great coaches in NFL history has decided he's not going to use it anymore. Here's where I think this is going to go. There has already been talk and there's been a push for video to be put on these tablets. And I think now Microsoft is going to put even more pressure on the league to do it, and the league is going to feel even more compelled to do it. And if Bill Belichick doesn't change his mind, he's going to be at a real disadvantage because everybody else is going to be using video on the tablet, and he's not using the video. And they aren't going to be able to send down pictures like they have in Harry Potter where the pictures move. So he's going to be screwed. You know what? That was a lame...
I'm great.
All for pop culture references, but that's lame. I shouldn't know that.
My kids are 15 and 13. We just watched an episode of Harry Potter last week. It was an Elite reference. Speaking of the NFL league-wide, many keep bringing up NFL ratings are sagging. What's your take on that?
Well, I think there's a lot of different reasons why the ratings are down. And you've got the commissioner saying, we don't have fewer viewers. We just have viewers who aren't watching as much. And I don't know that... I don't know which one's better. I think they're both bad. I think the NFL has a real incentive to privately acknowledge there's a problem, to spend the money necessary to identify the problem with focus groups and surveys and efforts to research why the viewing habits have changed and what they can do to change them back. This all happens so quickly. You don't just have a revolution where all of a sudden people say, I'm not interested in watching NFL games. I mean, Paul, the Sunday and Monday ratings were down more than 33% in comparison to last year's slot. In the same week six, Sunday, Monday night, primetime, back-to-back. And it could just be that the matchups aren't compelling. Look how many one-win teams we've seen in primetime. We had the one-win Panthers against the one-win Buccaneers on Monday Night Football within the last 2 weeks. We have the one-win Bears on Thursday night. And they may still be one win on the back end of that, although, again, we don't want to make this dated in the event that you're listening to it be on Thursday night.
Oh, my God.
Well, but you don't want people to feel like they're listening to something. Do you read a daily newspaper?
I understand that, but you worry about the dumbest things. If somebody's listening Saturday and Chicago upset Green Bay, who freaking cares?
Do you read a newspaper from Thursday on Saturday?
Yes, I do. If it's the New York Post, I do because I love that tabloid.
I guess the better example is, we're not doing this every day. If we were doing it every day, it would be a bigger issue. We're doing it once a week. It's like Time Magazine, right? It's still relevant.
What about those who say the political season and Trump and Clinton and everything going on, that plays into it?
Well, it played into it because there were debates up against a couple of primetime games. But college football ratings are up this year. It's not this national distraction that is causing people to not enjoy football. I think it comes down to the matchups not being as compelling, and they need more acrimony. They need, you know, when Brandon Marshall, the Broncos linebacker, comes out and says, "We want to kill Brock Osweiler," on one hand, I say that's horrible. On the other hand, I say that's great. You need a little WWE spice to some of these primetime games. And here's my suggestion, and they'll probably never do it, but I think this would make sense. Week 17, that's when we go into the primetime game on Sunday night, not knowing until 6 days beforehand which game it's going to be. And they don't even earmark tentatively a Sunday afternoon game for the 8:30 p.m. Eastern time slot. Why not do that every week? Why not set, you set week one, you set week two, maybe week three. Beyond that, you don't schedule a game for Sunday night. You pick a game every Monday that will be played on Sunday night. And, you know, it's a logistical issue for NBC because they may be in Foxborough and have to get everything to Seattle quickly. They're not going to know until Monday. And for the fans who have tickets to that 1 o'clock Eastern, 12 o'clock Cornfields game, they may not be able to go to an evening game. But it suddenly becomes the biggest game of the week, and it's going to create a lot of excitement. And I think that that would be a way to make Sunday night feel special. And it would work in concept Thursday and Monday. The only problem is logistically it's impossible to change the schedules, especially for Thursday. Maybe you could pull it off for Monday night. But they don't care. See, Monday night they don't care about the compelling matchup and the ratings as much because that's all about cable TV and the money grab that comes from being able to charge the big amounts to the subscribers. Now, that dynamic is changing as well. But for broadcast games, Thursday and Sunday, part of the value is to get the biggest possible audience. And one way you get the biggest possible audience is to ensure that the best game on Sunday is played on Sunday night. Texans-Colts was not the best game on Sunday. Cowboys-Packers is the game that should have been played in that time slot, and the ratings would have been dramatically higher if it had been Cowboys-Packers.
Florio.
Now, with that idea, I mean, if I'm CBS or Fox or whatever and I got the best game of the week, I don't want it moving networks every single week.
Well, you're going to have givebacks by CBS and Fox or to CBS and Fox, and you're going to have NBC pay more money. That's part of it. And I've heard that the NFL may go back to the networks and try to renegotiate or do something because they're locked in through 2022 with the current formula. And if the current formula isn't working, they need to come up with some changes.
But are we sure the current formula is not working, or is this a small sample size where people will freak out and go too far?
Well, I don't know. The NFL has the incentive to find out. And we keep seeing it week in and week out. And maybe it'll change. There's some good primetime games coming up. Arizona, Seattle on Sunday night is better than Texans-Colts. The Monday night game, the Texans and the Broncos, has some compelling storylines to it. You've got a Broncos-Raiders game coming up in a couple of weeks. There are some good primetime games that are coming up. And after the election, we'll see if that does change things. If there is any validity to the idea that Trump versus Clinton is sapping the national interest in football, then we'll see. It's going to be here in just a matter of weeks. But, you know, hey, there's a game on a Thursday night coming up that should have gigantic ratings, depending upon the two teams involved, if they can continue to play the way they have. Dallas Cowboys at Minnesota Vikings, Thursday, December 1. I'm not big on politicking. You know, I don't like try to lay the foundation with the boss to give me the assignment I want or let me do this or let me do that. I just bust my butt and let nature take its course. I am hoping that I'll be in Minnesota for that game. I'm not going to ask for it, but I'm hoping that I get to be there.
Would you be in the Vox box with me and watch the game off my right shoulder?
Do I get to talk?
Absolutely. If you're in town, you're part of the broadcast.
We're going to do it like we did back in 2010, the Favre game when he threw.
That's right.
What was it? What touchdown pass was it? It was some milestone touchdown pass to Randy Moss. He beat Antonio Cromartie in single coverage.
Yep, and we had that weather delay, and you joined the Vikings Radio Network for 30 minutes and chatted with General Manager Rick Spielman.
Oh, I helped you fill, uncompensated. Yeah. Actually, you tripled my pay for that.
That was awesome. Cincinnati, no matter when people are listening to this juicy podcast, Cincinnati is below 500 with a game scheduled Week 7 against Cleveland. For those who don't follow the Bengals closely, why is this team below 500?
Well, one of the reasons is Hugh Jackson left as offensive coordinator, and I know they've had Jay Gruden leave, and they had Mike Zimmer leave, and they just kept rolling. I think they're having a hard time replacing Hugh Jackson. And also, I think mentally, 5 years. The guys who have been there, the A.J. Greens, the Andy Daltons, 5 years of going to the playoffs, losing in the wild card round, and starting all over again. At some point, it wears you down, especially when last year they were on pace to have a bye. Even after Andy Dalton broke his thumb while he was trying to make a tackle following an interception against Pittsburgh with A.J. McCarron, they had the Broncos on the ropes on a Monday night, and they could have still had a bye. It, you know, a lot was not resolved in the AFC until the last Sunday of the season, and I think the Broncos entered the day possibly anywhere from the number one seed to out of the playoffs altogether. I mean, the things were not nailed down, and the Bengals had a chance, and they lost that game in overtime, and then they get in, and they host the wild card game against the Steelers, and they have it won. It's over. It's done. Vontaze Burfict intervenes. Pac-Man Jones intervenes. 30 yards of field position later, the Steelers kick a field goal and win. That's a tough pill to swallow, and that is a hard loss to recover from. And that's one of the reasons why I look at the Vikings and I say, kudos to Mike Zimmer and company for getting those guys to forget about wide left, to forget about Teddy Bridgewater's injury, to deal with adversity, to put the past in the rearview mirror and focus on the future, because it's not hard to come back from a season that got derailed that abruptly and that quickly, and to have lost that chance to go back to Arizona and give the Cardinals everything they could handle, and then a possible date with the Panthers in the NFC Championship game, to lose that. And then to go back to 0-0 and start digging again, that's an impressive task.
Off that.
The season can't end like that.
Last one. And it's my treat. It's my honor to do a podcast with you weekly. It's my honor to have you on my radio show at KFAN every Tuesday, 9:35 Cornfields. And it's also my pleasure to share with you the man you just referenced, Vikings kicker Blair Walsh. If you were a rock star, The way to put it would be, he has all of your albums. He's on ProFootballTalk.com all the time. I think he podcasts your radio show, Pro Football Talk, the radio show. Blair loves you. Now, I recently ran into Blair. He knows I know you. And he asked me, why is Mike killing me? Why is he so snarky with me? And honestly, Michael, I didn't have an answer, but you're hurting somebody's feelings who loves you.
Well, look, I'm not trying to hurt the guy's feelings. I'm trying to be realistic about the job. The job is you got to make your kicks. And if you can't make the kicks, you can't have the job. It's that simple. I'd love to be a kicker. I would have loved to have been a kicker. I used to enjoy kicking. I used to go down to the field and kick over a wire. Seriously, I kicked over a wire that was strung across the back of the field where we'd play. And I used to work on kicking, and my talent was very limited. But, you know, I could bang a 45-yarder in my day without a rush and, you know, not a snap and any of that stuff off of a tee. I could every once in a while, if the wind was right, I could put the leg into it. I'd have loved to have been a kicker. But I recognized I didn't have the ability to do it. And for whatever reason, something happened, and maybe it was back in January of 2016. But if you're not going to make your kicks on a consistent basis, they're going to find somebody else who does. And the challenge for the Vikings is to do it before there's another wide left. How do you can excuse – a year ago – the guy was fine. There were no issues. He's qualified and fit to hold the job. There's no problem with that. Then comes wide left, and then comes the reset to the season, and he's missing too many kicks. He's got to make his kicks. And it's not personal. It's reality. That's the most interchangeable position on the field, kicker and punter. And if you can't make your kicks, they're going to find somebody else who does. I had a GM tell me earlier this year, in the NFL, when it comes to kickers and punters, there are three who are great. There are three who are terrible, and everybody else in the middle is the same. And right now, based on how Blair has performed, he's closer to the low end. They can find somebody else, and maybe they will find somebody else. He's just got to make his kicks. He 2012, 13, 14, 15, it wasn't an issue. And now all of a sudden it's an issue. And whatever it is, he's got to fix it. Say Aaron Rodgers, whatever it is, you got to fix it. When you have an issue with your performance, you got to figure out how to fix it. And if you don't, especially at kicker, they're going to find somebody else. And hell, he should be glad that I'm calling him out. Man, does he want to just sleepwalk through his career until he wakes up one day and he's gone?
Of course not.
I think he knows he needs to make his kicks.
Michael, it's a week-by-week game. At last check, I think he was 4-for-4, so he's hot.
Well, but and here's hoping he keeps it up. But the problem is there's now reason to believe the team's on notice that there's a weakness there. He's on notice that there's a weakness there. And maybe he changes the narrative. But all he had to do was make that 27-yarder, and this none of this ever would have happened. So, I mean, I understand that guys don't like to be criticized. None of us like to be criticized. But when you're a kicker and you miss kicks, that's the easiest bright line basis for criticizing someone. He seems like a nice kid. I felt horrible for him when it happened last year, and I thought it was great how people rallied around him and the notes that the little kids sent him. That was great because he had to be as crestfallen as anyone. He probably was more heartbroken than anyone. That was a special day. It was a special moment back outdoors for a playoff game that felt like those games from the 70s. Bud Grant there. And the whole thing fell apart because the guy missed a 27-yard field goal. I get it. I felt bad for him there. But when it carries over into 2016, and now it's got the potential to mar another season, they got to be on notice about that. And he's got to improve it now, or they have to find somebody else who can make the kicks. And that gets it's look, if you just can't make the kicks, you can't have the job. It's that simple. And I don't mean any disrespect to him by saying that.
Right.
But when you have a team that has all the other pieces seemingly in place, and
right.
that's the one piece that you're worrying about, this is the one piece we shouldn't have to worry about. And if we are worried about it, we can find somebody else.
Michael, thanks for the contribution, and I'll chat with you next week, all right?
That's it. That's how we're ending it?
Yeah. That,
it's like I'm on your show, and you're running me off like I'm on your show. We don't have a hard break here. We don't have anybody run. But we can land the plane a little more easily than that. You just don't have to hang up on me like
no.
you always do.
But see, I know you won't permit me to thank those who helped the show if I don't cut you off. So that's why I say thank you. We will chat on the radio next week. 935 Central, FM 100.3, KFAN.com, and via the PA and Florio podcast. Thank you very much.
Wait, so you get the first word and the last word? Is that how this is going to go? Because we're going to have to renegotiate the contract if that's the case.
We thank Sean Gosser and Eric Nordquist for producing the PA and Florio podcast, and we also thank KFAN program director Chad Abbott. For Mike Florio, I'm Paul Allen. Thank you for listening.